Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 24th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing today, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, D.R. It's great to have you with us. So, D.R., about 10 years ago, in 2008, the year of our Lord, 2008, Massachusetts had the wisdom to pass a piece of legislation called the Global Warming Solutions Act that called for aggressive action on climate change and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions in our fine state. Mm-hmm. Then a few years later, probably in 2015 or 16, if memory serves properly, there was another energy bill that came before the state house, the Massachusetts legislature, and that was more explicit. That called for a policy in Massachusetts that would end up with the state having something like 1,800 gigawatts of wind power installed by 2030 or some such timeline like that, right? Mm-hmm. That put a mandate on Massachusetts to put out requests for quotations, ask for bids on building wind turbines that might build up to the 1,800 gigawatt level, right? So with that, that as prologue, tell me what has happened today as far as the wind industry in Massachusetts.
Well, the New York Times notes that Massachusetts selected a group made up of a Danish investment firm and a Spanish utility to erect giant turbines as part of the Vineyard Wind Project. The initial project will generate 800 megawatts of electricity, and at the same time, Rhode Island has announced it will award a 400 megawatt offshore wind project to another participant. So it looks like New England as a whole is really moving aggressively towards clean energy, but this is being hailed specifically with regards to the Massachusetts portion of it as a great step forward in terms of clean energy.
Now, and I agree, it is. It's a big step. We have talked in this program about the Northern Pass, right? Remember, we talked about the Northern Pass of building power lines to bring power from hydroelectric dams in Quebec, bring them down into Massachusetts, and there was a big walking calamity about the state's choice for the vendor there to provide that. This is the other aspect of that same policy. In addition to bringing in the hydropower, we want to bring in clean wind power that we're going to build. And so this is part of that, right? And my understanding is that this the first really big wind project in the United States, Block Island, God bless him, only has three wind turbines. This is a big one. It's going to be south of Martha's Vineyard, right? That's where it's located.
Yes.
That's why it's called Vineyard Wind.
Indeed.
And the other aspect of this is that it's going to be something like 15 miles offshore, right?
Yes, definitely.
And that places it pretty much over the horizon where nobody gets, not many people get bent out of shape because they can't see the wind turbines, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you do wonder if there's still going to be maybe not lawsuits, but certainly whining from the same people who were responsible for the sabotaging of Cape Wind.
Well, if they know wind turbines are out there, but I mean the other big advantage of these offshore. So this is way offshore. The wind is stronger and steadier, right? And they can build these wind turbines to be pretty gigantic, right? I mean, I've seen comparisons. I mean, these things are enormous. And just as an interesting point for people, the reason that you want to keep making the wind turbines bigger is because the amount of energy that you can extract from the air basically depends on the size of the circle that the wind turbines draw out, right? Now, the wind going through that circle, that's all the energy you're going to get. You make that circle bigger and bigger, you can get more and more wind and more energy. So there's this big push to make these, gigantic wind turbine towers. And these things that would probably be put offshore here are really going to be enormous. But fortunately, they're way, way out and 15 miles out in the ocean. So that's a good thing, right?
Definitely, definitely. And the clean energy it can provide is definitely a good thing.
Well, in the article in the New York Times, we'll put up a link to it. There's one, I guess, at WBUR and in the New York Times. They're talking about something like 6,000 jobs over the next 20 years or something. No, 9,850 jobs over 10 years, which, of course, would be mostly construction jobs, right, to build, to sail out and build these things out in the water. But then there's a whole industry around servicing them, right? So you basically have this huge power plant out in the water. It's high tech. It needs to be taken care of. And so there are jobs and industry around that. And from the article, I'm quite excited because most of that industry, at least the Massachusetts's locus of attention, has been on the port of New Bedford, my fair city, to service and be the place where the boats come and go. Because they're going to have to be talking about 600-foot long rotors that have to. So the rotors, right? One blade of the wind turbines, something like 600 feet long. It's like, man, you need a big, long boat and a deep harbor, right, to get that boat in close to shore, big enough to carry that 600-foot turbine blade, and then sail it out and put it up. It's a huge industry, and it's all going to come out of New Bedford, which are green jobs, right?
And it makes you wonder, you know, between Massachusetts taking, you know, creating jobs through offshore wind and California creating jobs through their new solar mandate, are other states that are, you know, dependent upon declining fossil fuel jobs are going to look at Massachusetts and California and start getting a little jealous and start saying to themselves, hey, you know, maybe we should try to get in on that action. Why should we just leave it to Massachusetts and California?
We could only hope, as I say, from your lips to God's ears, that people see this. And that is why Massachusetts has and will maintain the kind of bold leadership, right? This is driven by policy from all levels of Massachusetts government to take these actions, and it's a good day to see that this, despite all of the hoo-ha that you hear coming out of Washington, right, the insanity. I mean, common sense people know what's going to happen, and they're making good stuff happen by planning and building these wind turbines.
Exactly.
I mean, the other thing. So I'm all pumped up about this because it really is a great thing. The other point is that Brayton Point is a place outside of the city of Fall River, which is about 15 miles west of New Bedford. Another harbor. Brayton Point used to be a coal-powered plant for electricity, and so Brayton Point has an enormous infrastructure to receive the power from the wind turbines, right? So somebody's going to have to lay down 15-mile-long cables to carry all that electricity from the wind turbines out in the water, and they're likely to come in Fall River. And the Brayton Point site has been selected for the construction of many of these what are called the big stainless steel tubes. So if you think of a wind turbine, right, it's this big, tall, round spire, right, at the top of which are the three blades. But those big circular piers have to be manufactured someplace, and my understanding is those are going to be manufactured in Fall River at this Brayton Point site, which again is a great thing for the Massachusetts economy.
Exactly. And again, it goes back to what clean energy advocates say all the time about jobs that cannot be outsourced. And when you think about this within the context of all these stories about entities that got big tax cuts, benefited from the Trump tax cut, that are now shipping jobs overseas, how about, you know, why not, if you're in a state, why not take a look at an industry that's not shipping jobs overseas, that's creating jobs for your constituents, and start, you know, paying attention to that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I think that fortunately, with the support of climate hawks across the state of Massachusetts, we can demand. We'll talk a little bit about what you can do to demand yet the next step. But right now, between the south coast of Massachusetts is likely to become a hub of clean energy to build these wind turbines. That's great for the state of Massachusetts. It's going to spawn jobs all through the state because there's lots of, I mean, one of the jobs I was interested in a while ago was, is you think of it, that the somebody has to start a company that will collect the data from all of these wind turbines, right? So now you have 20 wind turbines, 50 wind turbines south of Martha's Vineyard. Somebody's got to be smart enough to be collecting all that electronic data, putting it together, figuring out which way the wind's going to blow, you know, how to determine that everything's running properly. Those are all high-tech jobs that are going to be coming to Massachusetts, and it's a really good thing.
I guess you can call it a wind-wind situation.
All right, I'm going to have to write that down, a wind-wind situation. Anyway, so good on the state of Massachusetts for doing this. The other interesting and entertaining thing that has come to pass in the last few weeks, DR, tell me if you've heard of this. We've talked a lot about the advent of electric vehicles coming down the pike, literally. But one very useful, concrete, and practical way to use electric vehicles is to make electric buses. If you've ever been in a city, and I've been in a couple, where you're stuck behind a diesel bus that's spewing out black smoke, and the smoke's all over the back of the bus, and everything's grimy and gritty, and there's three buses line up, and everything stinks. Well, okay, that's not good for anybody. It's not good for the planet. It's not good for the people in the city. It's just a bad deal. But what if that bus was electric, right? And it turns out that the city of Boston is engaging in a pilot program to buy, I think, at least five buses. They got federal money to buy five electric buses that they will test out to see how well they operate. And, I mean, that, again, is a good thing. It's beautiful because a bus runs a preset route, right? So you know that the bus is always going to go back to the terminal. You can charge it up again. You know exactly how far it's going to drive. No such thing as worrying about running out of battery power, right? Everything, it's all planned out. It's a great application of electric vehicles. Did you see, I mean, did you see anything on that, DR? Or
is there's a Globe editorial about that point, about how the T can indeed, you know, step up in terms of reducing transportation emissions. And this is on the heels of an effort, I believe we talked about a couple weeks ago, in New York by Mayor Bill de Blasio to try to get public buses in New York to be all electric. And again, you know, when we talk about, you know, transportation emissions and need to get them down, this is an easy and common sense way to reduce these emissions dramatically by going to electric buses.
And that's an interesting point you raise, is that I have been thinking in the background about a podcast that relates to the question of greenhouse gas emissions from transportation in Massachusetts. That's one of the next big nuts that's going to be cracked to address climate change, right? Because we've got regional greenhouse gas initiative. There's a lot of work being done on solar panels and stuff like that. We got the wind turbine stuff going. But the transportation sector, everybody driving around in their cars, people building houses farther and farther away where they have to commute. There's articles about the nightmarish commutes. I mean, finding ways to reduce carbon emissions from transportation while at the same time building a stronger city is something that is coming fast, and we're going to be talking more and more about it. And clean electric buses are just one segment of that, right? It's one little aspect of Massachusetts's need to get to a greener transportation policy, right?
Definitely.
And I think there was on the MCAN Facebook page a few weeks ago, I guess a city in Germany has basically made public transportation free. Right? And I think that'd be great. Talk about an economic boom, right? You're going to lose money on running the bus, but everyone gets more people would ride if it was free. If it was just a shuttle service, you'd jump on and jump off. Think how much that would benefit the city of Boston to have basically free bus transportation all around, and how many cars that would take off the road. And how?
But you know, some fool's going to call it socialism, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. Guess what? Maybe it is. Maybe that's not so bad. So there's all the interesting stuff happening in Massachusetts right now, and there is one more interesting thing that's happening, or potentially might happen, that needs the support of people like you, dear listener. It is a bill that is currently before the Massachusetts State Legislature, yet another bill. And this is called, what's it called? A bill to enact clean energy, right? It's typically called the Pacheco bill after Senator Mark Pacheco, who's the lead author of it. And this is an excellent bill. It has a lot of good common sense climate policies in it. And what's happening is that the two-year run of the Massachusetts legislature is coming to an end. Right? So in 2016, we elected a legislature, and that runs through 2018. And the elections this November are going to be to choose the next two-year cycle. Right? Mm-hmm. But that means this summer is when all the bills that have been bopping around Beacon Hill all have to get acted on. So between now and the end of July or so, the state legislature is going to have to take action. And one of the bills we want them to take action on is this Pacheco bill. And the Pacheco bill was basically lauded in an editorial in the Boston Globe. Boo, the Boston, generally speaking, I don't like Boston Globe editorials. But by this one was by Mary Robinson, who I guess went to Harvard, but then became, lo and behold, the Prime Minister of Ireland. Did you see any of that, D.R.?
Yes, it's interesting to have the former president of Ireland endorsing something green, eh?
Yeah, what a surprise! You wouldn't think she'd do that, huh?
Yeah, it was a great op-ed basically saying that, you know, this bill, the Pacheco bill, can show state level leadership in the absence of federal leadership in the United States. And Robinson notes quote that the spirit behind the bill encapsulates the think globally, act locally maxim that has inspired the climate movement for decades and is worthy of wide support. It's, you know, how sad it is that we have to look to leadership from other countries as opposed to our own when it comes to such op-eds.
But that's why Massachusetts is here, because Boston and Massachusetts are leading. It's interesting that the prime minister of another country and a woman who was a UN climate official, I forget, I'm not sure what her, but she was at the UN doing climate stuff, that she thinks highly enough of this Pacheco bill to come and write an editorial in the Boston Globe to say that it's a good thing to do. And you basically, I won't pretend I have an Irish brogue, but to say, oh, you guys in Massachusetts ought to pass this bill. Right?
Exactly.
And so what can you do? If you live in Massachusetts, call up your state senator. If you don't know who your state senator is, you can go to the MCAN, the blog that I'm going to post in a little while, that has a way to look up who your state senator is and what his or her phone number is, and you call him up and tell that state senator to vote for the Pacheco bill. I mean, simple as that. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. We'll leave it at that. I think that I say that in this article from Mary Robinson, she quotes Henry James, who was a Bostonian philosopher, a literary guy, who said, "A tradition is kept alive only by adding something to it." And so we're going to keep the tradition of clean energy alive by adding even more to it by passing this Pacheco bill. Right, DR?
Absolutely.
Is that inspiring enough? Are you ready to march? You got your pitchfork and torch ready to go? We're going to go get the Pacheco bill signed?
Indeed.
I think it's important. It's a good bill. So anyway, we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog, surprisingly enough. You can also find links to the blog and the show on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean or any of those podcast distribution services. And of course, you can find us on what is now known as Apple Podcasts. If you go there, please review us. It helps us get up in the world. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the current administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.